The 100 Years' War, France Turns Against Flanders, Part 2. While outside Oudenarde, Philip van Artevelde was planning his own campaign. The best estimates of his strength suggest that he had between 30 and 40,000 men under arms, a vast host, but consisting almost entirely of raw urban levies. The two captains of Bruges, Peter van der Bosch and Peter de Winter, were detailed to hold the line of the River Lys. The eastern end of this sector was defended by the walled town of Courtrai, and the western one petered out into the marsh and the dense forest beyond Merville. All the bridges over the river were broken except for those at Compiègne and Warrenton, which carried two roads leading north from Lille. Peter van der Bosch set up his headquarters at Comines and concentrated the bulk of his forces there. De Winter's men guarded the crossing at Warrenton. A curtain of troops was left to contain the garrison of Oudenarde. Meanwhile, van Artevelde formed the rest of his forces into a great field army in the valley of the Scheldt west of Lille. His main problem was the loyalty of the other towns. Probably only Courtrai could be counted on. Bruges and Ypres were divided communities, ruled by commissioners from Ghent with the support of the cloth workers' guilds. In the last days before the French invaded, van Artevelde visited both towns to rally his supporters and raise morale among the frightened inhabitants. As the crisis approached, he became increasingly hysterical. He spent 5 days haranguing the populace of Ypres in the marketplace. He told them that the French would never succeed in crossing the River Lys. He promised that help was on its way from England. Like the French king's ministers, he had no idea the time required to recruit an army in England and ship it across the canal. The French army's strategy was devised by the constable, Olivier de Clisson. His objective was to engage the Flemings as early as possible. Daniel Harwin's garrison at Oudenarde was at the end of its endurance. The season was late. Heavy rain made going tough for the French army horses and supply trains. The army probably could not have withstood a prolonged campaign. So spurning suggestions that he should take the long way around by Saint-Omer, Clisson decided to force the crossing at Lys at Comines. On November the 12th, 1382, the French army moved north from Arras. At about the same time, the troops of Louis de Mal advanced from Lille and attempted to seize the bridge. This operation turned out disastrously. Louis's men, commanded by his bastard son, achieved complete surprise and successfully stormed the bridge, but the Flemings counterattacked in overwhelming force, recovering the bridge and slaughtering most of the attackers. As a result, when the vanguard of the French army reached the river a few days later, the bridge broken and far bank guarded by a considerable force supported by a corps of archers and a battery of artillery. There was nowhere that the river could be forded. The French found some small boats moored on the south bank, which served the water mills built in the middle of the stream. After dusk on November the 19th, 1382, they launched a frontal assault across the river. The task was entrusted to about 600 men led by the Lord Sempe, an experienced veteran who had commanded on the Marsh of Calais for many years and knew the ground well. His men reached the opposite bank, 5 men to a boat. They formed up on the far side and rushed the flank of the Flemish defenders. The Flemings were taken by surprise and fled in confusion. The French took possession of the broken stumps of the bridge and set about repairing it. They had already built an improvised timber carriageway across the stream when the Flemings counterattacked in the early hours of the morning. The Flemings came on several thousand strong, led by Peter van der Bosch himself and a female standard bearer bearing the cross of St. George. Sempe held them off for long enough time to enable Clisson to bring reinforcements across the bridge to support him. The Flemings were defeated in hand-to-hand fighting and put to flight with heavy losses. The standard bearer was killed. Van der Bosch was seriously wounded in the head and shoulders and had to be carried back to Bruges in a litter. Clisson's troops lost a tenth of their strength, but the crossing had been secured. In the course of November 20th, the whole French army crossed over into Flanders. Ypres opened its gates without a fight. On November the 23rd, Charles VI entered the town. The commissioners of Ghent, delivered up to the vengeance of the king, were summarily executed outside the gates. The Flemings had believed van Artevelde's claims that the French army could be held south of the Lys. As the news arrived of the defeat at Comines, panic spread through the villages and towns of western Flanders. The first reports were quick to follow by advanced detachments of the French army, which fanned out across the country. fired by anger against people whom they've learned to hate as Anglophiles, urbanists, and revolutionaries. The town sent delegations before the king bearing the keys to their gates. Everywhere the inhabitants declared their French allegiance with white crosses sewn on the clothes, but it was useless. The soldiers looted and burned everywhere they went. Three substantial cloth-making towns, Poperinghe, Vervins, and Messines, were sacked in the first 48 hours. This destruction of Poperinghe, a town of some 4,000 people, set new standards for brutality. The Duke of Bourbon's division arrived outside the wall shortly after midnight on November the 24th and fell on the night watch, which was guarding the barricades at the main gate. They killed as many as they could catch, while the rest fled through the streets, waking their fellow citizens. The inhabitants grabbed as much of their plate and clothes that they could carry and made for the other gates, while the soldiers spread through the town, breaking open and looting houses. They then lit fire systematically across the town before withdrawing to Ypres with their booty. As they left, a fresh horde of soldiers arrived, mostly Flemish noblemen in the service of Louis de Mauls. The flames are already taking hold as the newcomers passed through the town, breaking into every house that could still be entered in search of loot. A graphic account was given a few weeks later at a popular shrine at Turenne by a Welsh pilgrim who had fought with the French army. He had arrived at Poperinghe with Bourbon's men and got trapped by the fires. He described the streets and open spaces filled with soldiers shouting and panic-stricken townsmen running about looking for a way out of the inferno. The narrator took refuge in the cellar of a burning house. When he emerged the next morning, the whole area was a desert of charred wood and cinders, with a few large buildings still standing, but engulfed by flames. He followed behind a stream of people making their way through the intense heat towards a gate and passing into the open countryside outside. He threw himself into the river. Emerging from the water on the opposite side of the bank, he found himself surrounded by frightened and angry inhabitants of the town who had passed the night in the meadows watching the destruction of their homes. He fled for his life, pursued by a furious crowd of refugees with pikes and axes. Now, of course, Philip van Artevelde was in Ghent when the news came in of the French crossing the Lys, and he left at once to rejoin the army at Oudenarde. So he thought he could hold them at the river, and that failed. But that's quite a task, moving your attacking force across five people at a time in a small boat. So we'll see what happens next time, because the French are just beginning to get even with the Flemings. Now, the sources for this: The Hundred Years' War, The Chronicles by Froissart, The Hundred Years' War by Perrois, The Hundred Years' War by Nylans, and The Hundred Years' War, The House Divided, Volume 3 by Sumption. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com, or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.